Oh, boy. Hi, my name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Russell.
I see Jim A is here. You guys don't know Jimmy. He's from Bali, Indonesia. Friend of mine from Bali. And yeah, it's good to see you. Now, all you have to do is take a 24-hour plane ride. I spoke from once at some roundup we had. It's wonderful. Have you ever, you guys still have that roundup there?
Yeah.
June. Absolutely incredible. You got to go out to Bali, and it's a wonderful, wonderful place if you've been out there. But I'm too old for that now. I can't do those 24-hour plane trips. But you guys could do it. Some of the youngsters could do it. You'd have a ball out there. All he does, he sends me pictures of himself surfing. He lives on a mountaintop. Beautiful bride and a beautiful young daughter. And all he does is send me pictures of him surfing. You're like in your 50s now, aren't you?
Yeah.
All he does all day is he surfs and he goes fishing in the Indian Ocean. He shows me pictures of him with these big fish with all the other guys in AA out there, you know, fishing and doing things like that. So, in any event, it's good to see you here, Jimmy. I'm glad you could make it. Did I mention I'm an alcoholic? I think I did. And I'm a member of the Carl Gables group, and I haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981. And it's great to be here, and I'm going to sort of talk a little about the fourth step and other stuff, you know. And by the way, let me get this out of the way. We have a book called Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the basic text. Now, this is all just, you understand, it's all just my opinion based upon my experience, and take it or leave it, whatever. But I'm just going to tell you right off the bat so we can leave this subject now. I'm not a how-to guy. I'm not a how-to-do-it guy. That's I'm used to do the how-to-do-it. I'm not going to talk to you about how to do the fourth step. You can ask your sponsor, sit down with some other member about that, but I'm just going to give it to you in about 3 minutes, okay? This is the way I did it. I'm just going to tell you the way I did it. You know, of course, the first, you know, 3 months, I did mine after I had 18 months. And, you know, we all stalled a little. I kept on telling my sponsor, I'm working on it, which is alcohol code for leave me the hell alone, I ain't never going to do this. You know, it was confusing to me, you know, it was confusing. I kept on going to me, how do you do this thing? And when I got desperate enough, I remember I used to go to meetings. See, what happened to me, I'm fortunate. You know, one of the things they say in the book is one of the reasons people drink is because they don't do their fourth step or they don't do their fifth step or stuff like that. And I'm one of these guys, I'm fortunate, I'm blessed, because I could have very easily drank. I could have drank, maybe because I had a great sponsor, maybe because I went to a lot of meetings, maybe because I was so scared to drink, and maybe because I was so plugged in the program, even though I was stalling on the step, I didn't drink. But what happens is you start decompensating, the dis-ease sets in, you start getting worse and worse at decompensating. And I would go to these meetings, and every meeting I would go to, I went through this period of time where every meeting I would go to, I would say this, I would say, I feel terrible, I feel horrible, you know, everything is all crummy, it's not working for me, and I know I have to do my fourth step. And that was my song at every meeting I went to. I feel terrible, I feel horrible, you know, nothing's going right for me, it's all screwed up, and I know I have to do my fourth step. And of course, nobody could really talk to me because all I wanted to do was sing my pathetic song. And then one day, I went to a meeting. It was the 12 o'clock meeting of the downtown group of Alcoholics Anonymous. There was a guy named Henry there. Never saw him before, never seen him since. And I did my song. I did my, you know, my chorus. I said, my name's Russell. I feel terrible. I feel horrible. And nothing's going right. And I know it has something to do with I haven't done my fourth step. And this is what he said to me. He says, well, I'll tell you what. He says, why don't you just pick up a pencil? And I said, just go home and pick up a pencil. And I don't know. I can't explain it. You know, it just sort of stuck. Pick up. See, I didn't know how to do the fourth step. He says, don't worry about this. Just go home and pick up a pencil. And I didn't understand the fourth step. I didn't understand what I read the book, but I understood the word pick up a pencil. I got home that day at 4 o'clock. I picked up the pencil. I opened up the book. I don't know. Does anybody know that there's actually a chart in the book? There is a chart. It's good. It's Alcoholics Anonymous for Dummies. It's a chart. It's a how to do the fourth step. It's right in the middle of the fifth chapter, okay? It says resentment. It says makes a chart. It says resentment, what it affects, you know, and everything like that, and why. And I think the first one is Mr. Brown or something like that. And I started writing. I just started following the chart and following the directions. And because I was one of these guys when my sponsor would ask me, You know, who do you resent? And I say, I don't resent anybody. Of course, in the bars, I was talking about all the people I hated, you know, and all the, you know, but once I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, I loved everybody, you know. All I did was complain about people, complain about things and all that sort of stuff. But when my sponsor said the list of resentments, I said, no, I don't resent anybody. And all I know is I picked up a pencil and I started writing. And 3, 4, 5, 10 pages later, I had completed my 4-step. It took me an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours. Didn't take me 6 months. It took me an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours. And by 8:30 that night, I had finished my 4-step and I was at a meeting. So that's just me, you know. Somebody comes to me, I sponsor somebody, say, how do my? I point them to that chart. I say, here's the chart. There's 4 lists. This is the only thing I'm going to tell you on how to do. There's 4 lists in the big book, according to the chart. I said, look, you can do it the Hazleton way. You can get charts off the internet. You can do it any way possible. But since we have a basic text, you know, I always say to people, why don't you just start off with a basic text? What the heck? It worked for the first 100. Maybe it'll work for you. You know, it's right in the end. There's 4 lists. There's a list of resentments. There's a list of faults. No, notwithstanding who you resent, you know, what are your faults? Where were you to blame? A list of fears and a list of selfishness and things where we hurt people having to do with sex. And sexual desires and things of that. It's 4 lists. It's very simple, straightforward. It even tells you how to do it, how to look at it, and everything like that. So that's how to do the 4-step. Now that I've done that, I want to talk about what the real deal is. I want to talk about the 4-step, and that is why we do it, why I did it, and why you'll want to do it. And my feeling is, with alcoholics, the whole thing is motivation and desire. Hey, man, if you want it bad enough, you'll do it. If you can somehow put together what it's going to do for you, you know, it'll mean something to you. You'll get it. First of all, let me sort of read this little thing to you. It's sort of a nice little thing I like to read during meetings. This is called The Guy in the Glass. Some of you guys may have heard it before. When you get what you want, this was written in 1934. When you get what you want in your struggle for pelf, by the way, pelf, P-E-L-F, P-E, not self, pelf, P-E-L-F. You know what pelf is? Pelf is an old English word for stuff. Stuff. You know, when I came to AA, they talked about spirituality, spiritual, that which is spiritual. And I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what spiritual stuff meant, because I was material. I was into cars and women and, you know, houses and, you know, prestige. And, you know, I said, we're spiritual. So I looked up the word spiritual. And the closest thing I came to something that meant something to me was a definition. It says that which is non-material. Now, how about you? I was never involved in anything that was non-material. You know, it says that which is non-material. I mean, I spent the next 30 years in Alcoholics Anonymous trying to realize what's material and what's non-material. That which is non-material. Because what's non-material, which is what we're really focused on here, can't be taken away from you. It can't be taken away from you, can't rust, can't be destroyed. So pelf is stuff. It's the stuff. You know, one of the things it says we have been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence. It says if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. So first you gotta want what we have. You got to develop some sort of we, a group of people, a person. You said, man, I wish I had what that guy had. I wish I had what he had. You got to have that. Now, you may think everybody wants what we have. Not everybody wants what we have. Some people don't want what we have. They just want, you know what they want? There's a lot of people that come in here, God bless them. They don't want what we have. They want what they had. They want what they had back again. And there are some people that want what we have. They don't even know what we have. They want what we have, but they're not willing to go anywhere. They want what we have. But they're not willing to give up Sally, their girlfriend, who's still using heroin because, you know, they just don't want to give her up. They want what we have, but they're not willing to give that deal up. So, you know, it's not available for it. But the point is you develop a we. You develop somebody you see in here, some person, some situation where you say, I don't know what the deal is. I'm crazy, but I want what that. Maybe it's your sponsor. You want what he has. And that's a step before the step. So in any event, this is what it says. When you get what you want in your struggle for pelf, and the world makes you king for a day, then go to the mirror and look at yourself and see what that guy has to say. For it isn't your father or mother or wife whose judgment upon you must pass. For the fellow whose verdict counts most in your life is the guy staring back in the glass. He's the fellow to please, never mind all the rest, for he's with you clear up to the end, and you've passed your most dangerous, difficult test. If the guy in the glass is your friend. You may be like Jack Horner and chisel a plum and think you're a wonderful guy, but the man in the glass says you're only a bum if you can't look him straight in the eye. You can fool the whole world down the pathway of years and get pats on the back as you pass, but your final reward will be heartaches and tears if you've cheated the guy in the glass. Now, I just hope none of you guys, you know, cheat the guy in the glass. I hope none of you guys cheat yourself out of the real. I hope you don't settle for good stuff and avoid the best stuff, because there's really some incredible, there's incredible stuff in here. I mean, I can't even explain to you. I wish I could just take my brain, and not that I got it all, because, you know, I'm still groping and stretching for it, you know what I mean? I wish I could take my brain and how it works today and how it's operating, what's going on, and just let you borrow it for about, I don't know, just about 20 seconds, a minute, you know, an hour, just to see what it feels like, just to see what the deal is, you know, so that you would know that it doesn't have to be the way it is, the way you, it doesn't have to be the way you experience reality right now, because I know what's going on with a lot of people. You know, I know there's some old timers in the group, but I know what's going on with a lot of people. You know, I was talking to Garrett on the way up here, and I said, you know, I listen to a lot of people these days, you know, after almost 33 years of doing this thing, and I said, and whether 10 years, 15 years, you know, a lot of guys I sponsor. And I hear the panic, and I hear the worry, and I hear the deal. I hear the struggle. Okay, I hear the struggle. I hear the pain. And I said, and I understand it all. I get it all because I've been there and I've done that. And while I was going through it, I said, this ain't never going to go away. I thought it was never going to go away. And so I appreciate how painful sobriety can be. Even while I was experiencing how painful it was. It was somehow still not as bad as it was when I was drinking. I still didn't want to drink, but it can be, sobriety can be really painful. Not being able to sleep at 3 o'clock in the morning because you're broke and you don't have any money and you're worried about being homeless or something, that can be painful. Worrying about what other people think about you or what you said or what you're going to say or what's going to happen to you because you did something or didn't do something, or having that fear because you did this or you did that, or you're thinking people are going to find out about you or what they're saying about you. You know, it can be really, really painful. And if you're an alcoholic, you obsess about stuff like that. It's not like you have it one time for 5 minutes and it goes away. It's like the whole, it's like the, you know, it says in the book, it says, if you want, we have, and are willing to go to any length to get it. But it also says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has solely followed our path. You follow our path, you won't fail. And the path they had is experience. We've experienced much of heaven. We've been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence, of which we have not even dreamed. And part of that, which he said, the central factor in our lives today is that God has entered into our, we are convinced, we are absolutely convinced that God has entered into our hearts and our minds in a way which we believe is indeed miraculous. He has done for us what we can't do for ourselves. And so what's the central fact in your life today? I wish I could say the central fact in my life when I was coming through this thing for the first 10 or 15, 20 years was God. I mean, the central fact in your life today is, what do you think about first thing in the morning when you wake up? What do you think about when you're driving into work? What do you think about during the day? What do you think about when you're going to sleep at night? I mean, what do you think about? What's on your mind when you're doing that deal? You know, I want to read you something in the big book, in Dr. Bob, the Good Old Timers. And, I suggest you all really get this book and read it. This was AA during the first 4 years. You know where they said, rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path? In 1939, they were talking about the path they walked during the first 4 years. This is what they did during the first 4 years. You know, I don't know how many people know what they did, what was read during the first AA meeting. This is the first 4 years, a catalog of what they did. Page 218. There is no record of what happened at the first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous except for a grapevine account. Years later, noting that it was led by Dr. Bob, who put his foot on the rung of a dining room chair, identified himself as an alcoholic, and began reading the Sermon on the Mount. That's Matthew 5, 6, and 7. Of the Bible. That's all they read was the Bible. They found the books that were absolutely essential was the Sermon on the Mount, you know, 1 Corinthians 13, and the book of James. That's during the first 4 years. That's what they did. You know, you want to start doing this thing thoroughly? Those are the books that you're going to study. Now, I'm telling you, you have to do that? No, you don't have to do anything. You can do, you want some? You're alcoholics. You do whatever you want to do. Do whatever you want to do. Follow the instructions, don't follow the instructions. But nobody gets away with anything. You're going to get what you, it's very simple. You can either surrender and do what you're told and follow directions, or you can do the old, I'm doing my program, you do your program thing. And you'll get out of it what you'll get out of it. And that's the way it'll work. And I did what everybody else did. I tried to wiggle my way out of this thing. I tried to do it the you know, my unique way, my customized way, where I didn't have to do anything, or I only did the things that suited me, or the things that I wanted. And it worked to a certain extent. You know, that's one of the things they found out. There's a great essay called The Strong Cup of Tea. They found out what happened in Alcoholics Anonymous is a lot of people found out that if they didn't do it exactly the way they did, they could stay sober anyway. But I've seen a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous over the last, you know, almost 33 years now. A lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous, I've seen them do this sort of, kind of, 60%, not getting rid of all the old ideas, and I've seen where that leads. And sometimes it leads to sobriety, but more often than not, it leads to drinking. And if it doesn't lead to drinking, sometimes it leads to somebody with 16 years who's a thumb-sucking crybaby. Sometimes it leads to somebody who's 18 years sober and is on his fourth marriage. Can't keep that. Sometimes it leads to people who have many years physical sobriety, but are living lives of quiet desperation. You know, there's two fellowships in here that I've noticed, and there's the fellowship of the Not Drinking Club, and there's the fellowship of the Rocket in the Fourth Dimension. And believe me, there's a lot less people in the Fourth Dimension. They talk about the Fourth Dimension. They talk about that fellowship. They call it the Fellowship of the Spirit. That fellowship shows up around Step 6. That's where it's populated, around Step 6, which we'll talk about later on, where it says this is the step that separates the men from the boys. Apparently, listen, I'm just not making this stuff up, there is a separation in AA. There's a separation in AA between the people who are here just to stay sober, thank you, I got to get to work. You know, I just go to enough meetings, I do enough stuff, they get off my back, I'm not drinking, that fellowship. And then there's the fellowship of the people, I call them the heart of the 10th lepers, one day we'll go into that, the people that really want to grow in the image and likeness of their Creator. They're believers. They want to grow in the image and likeness of their Creator. That's not something I made up. That's in our big book. That's what our AA is about. That's what the fellowship is about. It says the men and the women, the men and the women, as opposed to the girls and the boys, are those who will repeatedly try these things on all their defects so they can grow in the image and likeness of their Creator, as a well-loved clergyman, you know, said. So that's the deal in the book. So in any event, as you know in the Sermon on the Mount, or you may not know in the Sermon on the Mount, one of the things that is stated, I mean, Bill Wilson didn't invent this thing, it's just a recapitulation of spiritual exercises. One of the things that says don't look at the beam, don't look at the speck in your brother's eyes, but look at the beam in your own eyes. You know, that's what it says. It says, don't be complaining to me about your brother, or looking at your brother, or criticizing other people, but why don't you examine yourself? Look at yourself, look at your own defects, which I don't know about you, but I know one thing about my alcoholism is all I want to do is think bad shit about other people and talk about it. I mean, that's my main thing, talking crap about other people behind their back. I mean, one thing that's obvious to me is when I'm not feeling well, which sometimes comes, you know, if you're an alcoholic, you know, that happens quite often. If I'm not doing well, if things aren't going my way, I've always got somebody to blame. I've always got somebody I can talk about. Man, I'll tell you, I am one of the great things that you're given if you're an alcoholic is a real excellent vision of how screwed up other people are and the ability to talk about it and the ability to attract other people that will agree with you and tell you you're right, you know what I mean, and talk bad shit about the other people too and endorse your bullshit, you know. And I don't know whether you remember this, but it says men and women like drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. What's the effect? Well, you see, alcoholics sober are restless, irritable, and discontented. We're diseased. We're in a state of disease. Sober. We're restless, irritable, and discontented unless we can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. So the problem I have, and I don't know the problem that most alcoholics have that I have, is they're just not in good shape sober. You know, we have the only disease, really, that's named after the cure. I mean, the best cure I had for my disease was alcohol. I'm an alcoholic because no woman, no suit of clothes, no amount of money, no car, no job, no nothing, work quite as well and quite as fast as just a few drinks. You know, I defy anybody to drink alcohol and have to do for them what it did for me and stop. You're not going to do it. It just worked that well. And so that's why I'm an alcoholic. And so I start thinking, because eventually the boost, my life became a bottle. The whole thing became a bottle. Everything was about drinking. You know, I didn't even need an excuse for drinking it. My excuse for drinking is I was awake. Awake was good enough for me. You know what I mean? I didn't need, you know, my mother dropped me on my head. You know, I don't have any money. If I was awake, I was drinking. And when your life becomes a bottle, when all you think about is the drinking, and you start drinking against your will, you know, you wake up in the morning and say, I'm not going to drink today. And by 5 o'clock, you're drinking. You wake up the next morning, I'm not going to you know, have a drink today, and by 5 o'clock you're drinking, you wake up and say, I'm not going to go to the bar today, by 5 o'clock you're going to the bar. When you do that over and over and over again, when you start thinking, and obviously, and when you start getting arrested for DUIs, and all sorts of bad crap happen to you because of the drinking, directly because of the drinking, you start getting the idea, if you're lucky, I suppose, that you have, you ready for this, a drinking problem. And so you start thinking that your problem may be your drinking. And so if you start thinking your problem may be the alcohol, we have any alcoholics in here? Is this any alcoholics? Well, let me ask them. Did you guys come here initially because you had an alcohol problem? No?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so I would be correct in saying that the reason you came to AA is because you had an alcohol problem, right? And you probably came to AA because you had an alcohol problem. You probably came here because it's called, you ready for this? Alcoholics Anonymous. So you probably figured that this place has something to do with alcohol, right? But here's the deal. But you guys aren't drinking. You're not drinking. So you see, the problem is, you see, if your problem is alcohol, you don't even belong in AA. I mean, you're not drinking. Hey, listen, I'm going to save you a lot of money. I'm going to save you a lot of hassles. If your problem is alcohol, if that's the only problem you have, don't drink. Don't drink. You're excused. You're excused. Don't drink. Have a wonderful life. But if you suffer from alcoholism, like I do, after you stop drinking, after you stop using the only damn drug that stopped you from blowing your brains out before you were 18, if you're an alcoholic like me, after you stop drinking, that's when the fun really begins. That's when alcohol shows up full force with nothing to stop it. Sure, you can go to a meeting and for a half an hour or 45 minutes, you can listen to the Dancing Monkey and all of a sudden it takes your mind off your catastrophically shitty situation, you know what I mean, and your terrible life, you know, and you can laugh a little and joke a little and say, man, that guy's just like me, and you feel a little bit better, and then you get in your car and you drive away and you start thinking and the fun begins again. And the whole thing happens again. All the bullshit. Why me? I can't believe this is happening. What am I going to do? Who am I going to talk to? They wouldn't understand. All the crap that goes on in your mind. You know, and it's really tough, isn't it? You can stop the drinking, but how do you stop the thinking? There was a great line. There's a great line by the Apostle Paul in, I think, one of the letters to the Corinthians. And he says this. He says, I've discovered the secret. You know, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the things it seems to indicate in all the steps, I don't know if you've looked at the steps, it finally winds up and says, it says, there is one who has all power, that one is God, may you find him now. You know what it says in the step? It says, you know what it says our disease is about? It says our disease is about selfishness and self-centeredness. You know what I think that means? I think that means that we think a lot about ourselves. Now, maybe not this group, this might be a higher level of alcoholics, but if you're like me, I spend most of my day thinking about me. You know, me is my favorite subject. I just think about me. You know, it's like that line in Bitches, you know, enough about me, let's talk about you. What do you think about me? You know what I mean? It's me. I just can't get rid of me. I just can't stop thinking about me or talking about me or worrying about me. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our problems, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, and self-seeking, we step on the toes of others. 100 forms of fear. You know, 100 forms. It means if you have figured out 30 forms of fear that you know of, there's 70 forms of fear that you haven't even seen yet. 100 forms of fear. And where self will run riot, though we usually don't think so. Above everything, an alcoholic must get rid of this selfishness. We must get rid of this self-centeredness. And that has to do with the thinking. We must get rid of the thinking, the self-centeredness. We must, or it kills us. That says God makes that possible. It says God makes that possible. It doesn't say your thinking makes that possible. Your brains make that possible. I mean, if you're going to buy into this program, that's the deal. As a matter of fact, later on, right after that sentence, it says the first thing is we got to quit playing God. You know what you're doing when you're worrying about yourself and worrying about what you're going to do and what you're going to say and what are you going to happen if this guy calls and what are you going to do if that guy calls and what are you going to do next week? What are you going to do next Monday? How are you going to handle this? How are you going to handle that? What are you going to do if this happens? What do you do if this doesn't happen? What do you do if you lose this? What do you do if you don't lose that? Or if you get hurt, if you don't get hurt? If this happens or that happens? You know what happens when you're doing that? You're playing God. You're like managing. I don't know if you read that book. It says, first of all, we had to quit managing our own lives. No human power could really rot false. Only God couldn't have good if we were sought being convinced. We read that all the time. We read that all the time. Then we go out and we get in our car and we start sitting there trying to manage our lives in our minds. And here's the real problem. If you try to stop it, you can't. You try to stop thinking that way, you can't. You know why? Because you've been thinking that way ever since you were sperm. You've been thinking that way ever since you were born. You don't know any other way of thinking. How are you going to think differently than the way you think? As a matter of fact, your alcoholic life seems the only normal one. As a matter of fact, it's comfortable in a very uncomfortable way for you to think that way. It's comfortable for you to worry. You like worrying. You wouldn't know what it would be not to worry. One day you'll not worry and you'll say, I'm worried because I'm not worried. I mean, you will. You'll go up to your sponsor and he says, I feel funny. Why? What's wrong? I don't know. I feel funny. Is there something wrong? No. I says, I don't know. It's just weird. He says, ah, that's serenity. Don't worry. You'll get used to it. If I wasn't worried about something, I'd be scared that I'm missing something or something's going to hurt me, because that's the way we are. That's the way we think. So the Apostle Paul says in one of the Corinthians, it says, I've learned the secret. He says, I've learned the secret. That's what he calls it. He says, the secret. He says, I've learned to be content in all things. I want you to get the secret. I want you to get this deal. You're going to like this deal. It's one thing to be sober, but how would you like to be sober? I mean, it's one thing to be physically sober, but how would you like to be emotionally sober? How would you like to get the next frontier? Bill Wilson said, the next frontier. He says, the problem is emotional sobriety. He said, our real problem is unhealthy dependencies. Unhealthy dependencies. Let me ask you something. What is your well-being dependent upon? What is your feeling good about yourself dependent upon? Is it dependent upon money? Is it dependent upon romance? Is it dependent upon getting laid or sex? Is it dependent upon a woman? Is it dependent upon a man? Is it dependent upon getting your own way? Is it dependent upon your family? What is your well-being dependent upon? You know, what do you think about? What do you need in order to feel okay? What can change you? What can change your moods? What can change your attitudes? You know what the Apostle Paul said? He says, I've learned the secret. Listen to this. This is cool. He says, I've learned the secret. He says, I've learned how to be content in all things. He says, I've been rich. I've been poor. I've been in jail. I've been out of jail. I've been in bad shape. I've been in good shape. He says, it doesn't matter. My mental state and who I am and what I am and how I feel about myself has nothing to do with my circumstances. How many of y'all can say that? How many of y'all can say that your feelings about yourself and your feelings about your life have nothing to do with the circumstances of your life? And how many of you, on the other hand, everything that's going on in your life is affected by what's going on outside of your life? What's going on by how your work's going, what's going on by how money's going, while it's going. You ever been to discussion meetings? You ever been to discussion meetings? You ever listen to alcoholics? You know what it's all about? You know, let me tell you what happened to me. Let me tell you what's going on with me. You ever listen to sponsees? I gotta talk to you. Why? Let me tell you what just happened. You know how affected alcoholics are? Well, of course I know. You're looking at me and say, what are you, crazy? This is what you're saying. You're saying, well, of course. Of course. Of course. I mean, what are you, crazy? Of course. There is no other way. What are you, you're talking like, you mean it doesn't affect you? That's what you're thinking. You're thinking I'm crazy to even talk this way. So one day, I'm 3 or 4 months sober, and I am taken to an AA. You know, one of the great things about going to AA, and somebody told me I should talk about the minors, and if I have about 5 or 10 minutes left, I'm going to tell you the story about the minors, because it really plays into this. One day, my sponsor took me to an AA meeting. I was about 3 or 4 months sober, and there was a guy speaking. It was the keynote group. I'll never forget it. There was a guy speaking named Al Kennedy. Al Kennedy had about 30 years. I had never seen him before. I'd never forget him. I talk about him all the time. I met him one time. I heard him for 1 hour. I've never forgotten him. That's the impression. You know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, in this deal, if you're open to this situation, if you want what we have, you will hang out with people for years. They won't even affect you. And we meet one guy for 1 hour, and it'll change your life. One guy for 1 minute, and it'll change your life. One girl for 1 minute, it'll change your life. Because there's something you'll see. You'll just be exposed to something. So I'm sitting there, and Al Kennedy is doing the meeting. He's up there. He's doing, I guess, sort of like trying to do what I'm trying to do right now. he's sharing his experience, strength, and hope, and he's talking to people. And I don't know what he was doing. I don't remember what he was saying. But I remember looking at this guy, and I remember saying, you know, it was like a man's man. You know what I mean? It's like somebody. It's like one of these guys, you're looking at him, you know, and I said, man, I wish I could be like him. Because he was obviously comfortable. He was like comfortable in his own skin. You know, he was transparent. You know, he was genuine. You know, you can tell. When you're an alcoholic, you're so used to the bullshit. You're so used to the bullshit artists and people that are full of crap that when it's sort of like when you see somebody who's genuine. And you know they're genuine because they're saying crap that's resonating inside of you. Then they're saying something. You say, you know you're telling the truth because that's the way I feel. I felt that. I understand what this guy's talking about. And he was genuine. He was sharing. He was uplifting people. And he was helping people out. And he was talking. And it was just great. You know, it's like when you ever meet one of these guys, and I hang around these guys that you just... I used to shadow my sponsor. I call them my sponsors because my sponsor would hang around with other mentors, other whole timers, and I'd hang around with these guys. You know what I mean? Because whenever I was with these guys, I felt safe. Whenever I was with my sponsor, I felt safe. No matter what was going on in my life, no matter how horrible it was, I felt safe. I remember going up, I think I told you guys this one time, I went up to a guy named Vince who was my sponsor at 10:30 at night at the car room. I dumped this whole load of crap on him. I vomited all over him about my life and all the problems and the things and this and that it was happening. And he looked at me and he said, and I think I had all these advanced degrees, you know what I mean? And Vince, I think he was a painter, he was a house painter. He was like 65 years old, you know, I don't think he graduated third grade. And he says, but I respected him. He had like 40 years, and I dumped all this crap on him, you know. And he looks at me, and he says, well, Russ, he says, you know, sometimes it's just like that. I said, yeah. He says, yeah. He says, listen, you don't drink. You go to meetings. It's going to be okay. I said, really? I said, absolutely. He says, you just don't drink, and you go to meetings, it's going to be fine. He says, really? He says, absolutely. Don't even worry about it. It's going to be okay. I said, wow, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it. And I walked away. I was like walking on air. I mean, he didn't tell me crap. You know what I mean? He didn't tell me how it was going to be okay. But it was just that Vince, because I believed in him. I had that moniker of, I believed in him. He just told me it was going to be okay, and I believed it. And I felt better. And it's like one of these things, you hang around with these men, and there is something about them. Now, there are other guys that have told me, don't worry, it's going to be okay. I'll say he's full of crap. But not when Vince told me that. Well, it was something about hanging around these guys, these men, okay, that somehow I'd be with them, and I would always feel better, or I'd feel safer if I was with them. And so I'm watching this guy, Al Kennedy. And I'm a typical... thumb-sucking crybaby and Alcoholics Anonymous. Every 5 seconds, I want to talk about all my problems and all that sort of stuff. And I'm listening to this Al Kennedy guy, and he's lifting me up, and I'm feeling good. And so he leaves. The meeting ends, and he leaves. And I turn to my sponsor, and I say, you know, that guy was great. I really like that guy. That guy, Al Kennedy, he's really good. And he says, yeah, Russ. He says, and this is what he says to me. Remember it like it was yesterday. He says, you know, he's dying of cancer. And I didn't even hear him. I said to him, I said, no, I'm talking about Al Kennedy, the guy who just did the meeting. He says, yeah, he's dying of cancer. I said, what are you talking about? He said, he's dying of cancer. So what do you mean he's dying of cancer? He didn't say anything about that. I mean, I've been to discussion meetings. I've been to AA meetings. You're dying of cancer. You say, I'm dying of cancer. You say, I'm scared. I'm dying of cancer. You complain. You whine. You say something. He never even mentioned it. He says he's dying of cancer. He's got maybe 3 months to live. He never mentioned it. He was just talking about his life and other people and how grateful he was and everything. I said, he never said anything. He says, I know. He didn't even mention it. He says, I know. He was just uplifting people and helping people. He was unafraid. He was calm. And he left to go. And 3 months later, Al Kennedy died. And I have met people in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, when I used to see these old timers, you know, these guys who were really serious about this deal, these guys with the 30, 40 years, I used to think the reason they were so calm and they were so relaxed and they never complained is because they obviously never had problems. And a lot of these guys had incredible problems. You know what? They had learned the secret. They had learned the secret. Their life and how they felt about themselves was no longer dictated by their checkbook. Their life and how they felt about themselves was no longer dictated by whether they were married or single, whether they had a car or they didn't have a car, where they had a home, their lives and how they felt about themselves were no longer dictated by the material circumstances of their life. And they didn't feel constrained to worry or run around regarding that stuff anymore. And of course, I didn't understand it because my whole life was about the pelf. My whole life was about the stuff. I didn't know of any other way of living except by doing that deal. And so I would see these people and I'd say, how do you do that? When I was 9 years sober, you know, I called up my sponsor. I mean, this disease, I mean, these old ideas we have, they hang on for a long period of time. This alcoholism that we have, the alcoholism that I have, the thing that really drags me down, that makes me feel sorry for myself, that makes me worried about stuff, that preys on my brain, drags on for years, decades. These old ideas, they don't go away like that. They hang on. I was 9 years sober. I called my sponsor. That time was Joe Snyder. I start complaining to him about my wife, the lovely Dickie. She was disrespecting me. She was answering me back. She wasn't listening to me. You know how they are, you know, spending money that I didn't have, you know, all that sort of stuff, you know, arguing with me, whatever the heck it is. She was doing something. You know how she is, you know, and then, you know. And it was upsetting me and all that sort of stuff. So I called them up and I'm bragging about my wife and I'm bragging about how she is and what she's doing and I can't believe it and she did this. And for 20 minutes, I go through details of every single thing my wife did, what she said, how she acted. And let me tell you something. She was wrong. She was wrong, wrong, wrong. I had a right to be. You ever see this, hear the spiritual axiom? Whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. Whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, now of course that doesn't apply to wives, right? That doesn't apply to bosses or what if you're dealing with assholes? What about assholes? You know, it doesn't apply to assholes, right? Whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. So, you know, the bottom line is I'm talking to my sponsor, I'm explaining to him in extreme detail all my problems. Any of you guys have sponsors? You ever, a few of you, okay. Well, you ever call up your sponsor and say, look, I got a real problem, I got to talk to you? And you start explaining in detail what your problem is? He doesn't seem, if you have a good sponsor, he's not really too impressed. But in any event, you know, I mean, instead of getting into it with you, but you explain to him, and it's a real problem to you. And you see the problem, you're explaining to him, you're really upset and everything like that. And so I was explaining my problem, so... You know, my sponsor listened to my problem, and he says this after he's done listening to me. He says, well, do you know why you're upset? And I said, what do you mean? He says, well, do you know why you're upset? I said, well, of course I know why I'm upset. Of course. He says, well, why are you upset? I said, what do you mean, why am I upset? He says, well, why are you upset? I said, I just told you why I was upset. I just explained it to you for 20 minutes in detail what she said and what she did. He said, and then he looks at me and he says, Russell, that's not why you're upset. He said, I know. Let me ask something. Do you know why you're upset? You know why you're upset, right? When you're upset, you know why you're upset, right? You can't wait to tell everybody why you're upset. And if this puke doesn't understand, you're telling the next person. As a matter of fact, you're going to the next person. You're going for 15 meetings. You're going for the marathon number of meetings to tell people why you're upset. And they better understand, because you got to listen to you. This is what Alfonso said. You got to listen to me. I got to why I'm upset. You know what I mean? And do you ever realize that every time you say why you're upset, it doesn't seem to help? It still preys upon your mind. And then you go up to the next person, why you're upset, and you just got to keep on talking about it and thinking about it in the car. You waste a whole week talking about why you're upset and why this thing is upsetting you. Nobody knows why you're upset more than you do, right? And you know something? It's clear to you why you're upset, right? You're absolutely sure why you're upset, right? So you call up your stupid sponsor, the dumbest son of a bitch in the world. You have no idea why you even asked this guy to be your sponsor. He doesn't appreciate you at all. He doesn't understand anything. We're talking about beyond stupid. And he says to you something like this. After you explain to him, you say, do you know why you're upset? And then he says, that's not why you're upset. And now you're really screwed. Because you know for a fact why you're upset. You're absolutely clear and sure why you're upset. You can't think of any other reason why you're upset. And he's telling you that's not the reason you're upset, and you've got this sneaky ass feeling because you're a sick son of a bitch that he might be right and you might be wrong. That's a scary deal. Because now what are you going to do? And then you know what he did after he said that's not why I'm upset? He shut up. He didn't say anything. He didn't say anything. Because I'm an alcoholic. I'm self-centered in the extreme. I'm defined. If he had told me why I was upset, I would have said, ah, you're full of shit. That's what he said. That's not true. You know, I'm going to get another sponsor or something like that. So he didn't say anything. So I said, that's not why I'm upset. And he said, no, that's not why you're upset. That's not why I'm upset. What I just said to you, he says, no, that's not why you're upset. And you see, because he had 30 years, and I had like 9 years, and he had been there, and I wanted what he had, and he didn't want to have anything to do with what I had, because he used to have what I had, and he knew what I had, because he used to be upset, you know what I mean? He knew why, he knew what the problem was. I didn't know what the problem was, because I was there, and he was there. He was in Apostle Paul land, learned to be content in all things, and I was still in, I can't believe that son of a bitch is doing this to me. And this is still happening to me. I was still in the alky land. I was still suffering from this disease. You understand? And so I said, that's not why I'm upset. He says, no, that's not why you're upset. And he said, and so then there was quiet. He didn't say a thing. And I said, so what are you going to do? What would you do? I said, well, are you going to tell me why I'm upset? And then he does this deal. He says, I love these sponsors. This one, he says, well, do you really want to know? And he like makes you beg, you know what I mean? He says, well, of course I want to know. Why am I upset? And then he says this, you know, because he loved me so much. He says, listen, stupid. Like, listen, stupid. That's the way he talked about me because they were so proud of me, you know what I mean? He says, listen, stupid. You're upset because you're upsettable. What is this, like Zen AA? You know? You're upset because you're upsettable. You know, I've been married for 32 years. How many of you guys have been married for 32 years? I'm an alcoholic. I've been sober to be 33 years. I've been married for 32 years. You think I'm married for 32 years because my wife does everything I tell her to do? I don't think so. You know, my wife, she's still doing the same stuff. She's still the same wife, still the same gal. Still the same, honey, can you get me some water? What are your hands broken? You know, your legs broken, you know? You know, you never take out the garbage. Same deal, same gal, same deal. I have my sponsees and they walk around with me sometimes and they'll be in my house and my wife will say something to me. You know, they're always complaining about their wives. And they'll hear my wife say something to me. It'll be something horrible or terrible, whatever it is. And they'll say something like, did you hear what your wife just said? And I said, no, what? And she says, oh, you know. I don't argue with her anymore. She says, you are the worst husband in the world. I said, you know, I think you may be right about that. I think I am. I said, I just plead guilty to everything, even if I'm not guilty. Just plead guilty. I don't want the trial. I want to go straight to the sentence. You know, what's this? What's the punishment? A blouse? What are we talking about? $50? What do I got to do? Dinner? A movie? What is going to get me out of it? Let's go straight. Give me the sentence. She says, oh, I can't even talk to you. You know, and he said, you're upset because that's the point. The point is that I used to go crazy if my wife was crazy. If my wife was upset, I'd be upset. If my boss was upset, I'd be upset. If you were upset in a room with me, I'd carry it for 15 weeks. If somebody was upset on the highway, I'd be upset. You know, my feelings about myself and what's going on in my life no longer depend upon my wife, her moods, my kids, what's happening, the checkbook, or any of the other stuff that's going around. Because you see, you know, because whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. And if you buy into that spiritual axiom and you figure out why you are upset about the things that you think you know why you're upset about, and you look into why you're upset about it, and you find out why you're really scared and why it really bothers you and what's really going on, and you focus on him and you talk to your sponsor and you work on that thing, the day will come where that exact thing that drives you crazy will be lifted and it'll no longer drive you crazy. It will no longer upset you. You will barely notice it. They won't even come up on the radar. And when that thing is, whatever it is, the money, the boss, the job, the wife, all of a sudden doesn't upset you, you'll find there's a whole strata of stuff that's been going on in your life that you used to think about, talk about, feel crappy about, and all of a sudden it'll be wiped off the radar, and you'll be walking through your life and that stuff will not upset you anymore. And some guy, maybe you sponsor, somebody will say, how come that stuff doesn't upset you? And you'll say, what stuff? And you'll say, all that stuff, you know? And one day, you'll be talking to a group of people and you'll be dying of cancer. You'll be like Al Kennedy. You'll have cancer, or your wife will have cancer, somebody will have cancer, and you'll be helping people. And you'll walk out of the room and someone will say, I like that guy, Russell Spatz. I like that guy, you know, Jim A. I like that guy. They'll say he's died of cancer. He says he didn't mention it because it doesn't upset him the way it would upset you. And when that day comes where all of a sudden the things that are going on, circumstances in your life with other people, by the way, which 99.9% of the time you have no control over, and which most of the time has absolutely nothing to do with you, because your wife is picking at you because she's mad because she gained 3 pounds, or your daughter is yelling at you because her boyfriend said something to her, or your boss is doing this because it has nothing to do with you, even though you're so self-centered you think everything has to do with you. When all of a sudden you stop worrying about the stuff that is bothering other people because it's somehow concerning you because all you do is think about you and other people and you worry about what other people think about you, when all of a sudden that stuff isn't bothering you because you're not botherable and you're not upsettable, then what will happen is you'll be able to walk through life and you won't have to worry about drinking anymore or drugging anymore or acting out anymore because you won't need any fixes. Because you will have been fixed, because you are already fixed. And that's when you're going to be experiencing much of heaven and be rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, of which you have not even dreamed. And I'll tell you, if you're an alcoholic like me, that does not come naturally. And it doesn't come from thinking. As a matter of fact, thinking makes it worse. So it doesn't matter how intelligent you are. As a matter of fact, one of the problems with the old idea is I am so brilliant and I know so much about myself. If I just think harder about this problem, I'll get better. And let me tell you something, our minds are like 3-mile islands. The harder we think, the more toxic it gets. And all of a sudden, there's a big mushroom straight-shaped cloud that forms over our mind. It has to do with focus on God. I mean, the big book of life, there is one who has all power. God will get, you know, he says, how do we get rid of this? God makes that possible. And we want so much to be able to do it ourselves. You know, and that's the problem. And that's part of what the fourth step and the fifth step is all about, sort of seeing those inner motivations. Because what does it say? Alcohol is but a symptom of our disease. Our real disease centers in our minds, not our body. It's in our minds. It's the way we think. And that's why you really want to do this stuff. You may not understand why you have to do this. I mean, you want to say, well, why can't I don't have to write this stuff down. I'll just do it in my mind. No, you don't want to just do that deal because it's the mind that's broken. And I can't tell you exactly why it works. I just follow directions. All I know is it worked. It worked for me. So you want that new freedom. You want that new happiness. You want to have that deal going on. You want to lose fear of, I asked, Ray O'Keefe one time, because I was always worried, like most people in AA are worried about money. Everybody here is, they're all worried about money, all scared about money. You haven't been worried about money, just hang around here long enough, you know what I mean? You know, I sponsor millionaires, they worry about money. You know, everybody's worrying about money, you know? And I asked Ray O'Keefe once, I said, well, when am I going to have economic security? I said, when am I going to have economic security? It says in the book, you know. I about the economic security. He says, never. I said, what do you mean, never? He says, you're never going to have it. He says, it says in the promises, I'll have economic. He says, it doesn't say that. He says, yes, it does. It says you're going to have economic. He says, no, it doesn't, Russ. He says, read it. And he handed me the big book. We're driving along, and I flipped it open. He says, fear of people and of economic insecurity. He says, you see, you'll always be broke. It just won't bother you. It's the fear of the people. You're going to be surrounded by people. It's just not going to bother you. You come in here and they ask you to do a meeting, and you say, this is what you say, I'm not ready. That's what you say. You say, I'm not ready. You come in here, you got 3 months, you got 1 month, they say, we want you to do the meeting, and you say, I'm not ready. And that makes sense to you. And, of course, what you're really saying, you don't even realize you're saying this is, I'm scared. I'm scared they're going to laugh at me. I'm scared I'm going to sound stupid. I'm scared something terrible is going to happen to me. I'm scared I'm going to be humiliated. Now, you don't even know that you're scared. You just know you're not ready. And you feel uncomfortable. And that's what happens. And you, and because of that, you're paralyzed with fear, and you can't do the meeting. Because you're scared of people. And you don't even know you're scared of people because you think you love people because all you did was drink with people. But now you don't have the drink, and the real deal is coming up, and you're scared shitless of everybody in the room and everything in the room. And one day, fear of people leaves you, and then you can just ad-lib for an hour and just talk about what's going on in your mind. It doesn't even bother you. You can talk to people and be genuine and tell them everything that's going on in your life and be honest with them, and it doesn't even bother you. And how does that, how do you turn from a person that's scared shitless of talking to a group of people to somebody who looks forward with sharing what's going on in their lives with a group of people? How do you get that? You know what that is? That's lack of fear. That's fear of people that leaves you. How do you get that deal? You think you get that deal by thinking about it? You think you psych yourself up in a room and say, I'm not going to let him bother me, I'm not going to let him bother me, I'm not going to let him bother me? You get crazier. That's a God thing. That's a transformation. That's a profound personality change that only happens from working these steps. So you got to decide what you want to be. Do you want to be walking around the world scared of everything that moves, worried, have all these people, places, and things in your mind, always being upset and all that sort of stuff? I mean, eventually, let me tell you something. You can hang on like prison, doing this one day at a time and hanging on to this thing. You know, what do they say? Hanging in there, hanging in there. Eventually, you know something? You're not going to be able to do it. Eventually, you're going to cave in. Eventually, you're going to drink. Or blow your brains out or do something stupid or go crazy. You want to do that or do you want to be free? What do you want? What kind of sobriety do you want? You want that new freedom and new happiness? Or you want that hanging in there one day at a time deal? What do you want? That's what this four step is all about. That's what these steps are going to get you to, where you're going to have a life of true freedom and happiness. So thank you very much. Next week we'll come back.